All right, good evening. We have 6 o'clock and it is November 2nd. I am calling this City Council study session to order. Will you all stand with me and say the Pledge of Allegiance? All right. Thank you, everyone. I'll do a real quick roll call. Councilman McGoffin.
Present.
Councilman Burns.
Present.
Councilwoman Kesty.
Present.
Councilman Allen.
Present.
Councilman Lavaca.
Present.
And on Zoom with us tonight, Councilman Owen.
Present.
And Councilwoman Diamond.
Present.
All right. Thank you. So we'll move right into the new business, and we'll begin right away with a 2023-2024 utility rate discussion. And Mr. Freiberger, I'm turning it over to you.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council, and guests. So this is a follow-up on a meeting we had with the Utility Committee a week ago, and I provided you with a summary memorandum, and I apologize that it covers so much ground, but there's three separate utilities here. I tried to format the memorandum so that we're covering the same basic bones for each of the utilities here. I give you the some general background information on CPI, and then talk about what the utility does, and then what we're proposing to do this year as far as the utility rates. Generally speaking, on a yearly basis, we look at each of the utilities from the aspect of making sure that the rate revenue that we're collecting will cover the operations and maintenance expenses, and in the case of the sewer utility, also the capital projects that are in our capital improvement program. Both of those are covered by a combination of rate revenue, and then also with the capital projects, we have a certain amount coming in from our general facilities charge as well. And the general facilities charge we have, generally speaking, also updated as a part of the annual presentation on the rates, and so we have both of those in the sewer utility tonight. So just a background on a couple of the general things. I've given you a summary of the Consumer Price Index, Urban CPIU for Seattle, Tacoma, Bremerton for reference. Those of you who were on the council last year have seen this before, and you know that even though the rates for 2020 to 2021 were in excess of 6%, we elected to recommend and adopt last year a 2.3% increase for all three of the utilities. Now, this year, the CPI is continuing to indicate significant increase in the inflation rate. In fact, for June to June 2021 to 22, the current posting is 9.5%. And there's a copy of the chart in the memorandum as well if you're interested in that additional detail. An average, two-year average over 20 through 2022 is about 8.2%. So that's affected our utilities, all three of them, in many ways. Mostly many of our normal operating costs have increased. Fuel in particular, as you can probably appreciate, we all are experiencing that in our personal lives as well. But that's in particular solid waste, which Leo will be talking about a bit tonight, has been heavily impacted by that on the diesel costs that we've been experiencing, but also our other operations as well, which were slightly less dependent on that, but certainly it's been a factor for all of those things. Our goods and services have all increased. The equipment replacement and repair fund, which is another element that the utilities have to fund, their portion of that. We have continued to see really large increases in equipment costs. and also long, long lead times on that. We've got some pieces of equipment, and you've heard the fire chief talk about this, that we've had on order for close to a year, and we still haven't seen them yet. And Leo's got a vehicle that's been on order for at least 9 months or something like that as well. But large increases on the costs, and annually I go in to the Equipment Repair and Replacement Fund and true those up and kind of restart the metric that we use to keep the ER&R updated and to reflect those cost increases, which we need to do. So that's also baked into the rate structure. So O&M, ER&R, and then CIP. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit in particular about the sewer utility first, and I did pass out tonight something that was in your packet. It is Katie Isaacson's financial outlook update, and we do this pretty much annually to make sure that we're properly supporting the sewer utility. Basically, what she will do is she will look at the actual costs for operations and maintenance, and I will give her the updated figures on the capital improvement program projects that we see necessary to support that particular utility, and then she'll put that together and mix it into the model that she has, and then that will tell us if we are properly covering our costs or not. This year we have found that the 2.3% that we had projected for 2022 isn't enough to properly cover that utility for 2023 and 24. And there's a lot of details in the plan, but on the cover page, you'll notice that she gives a what do sewer rates pay for part there, where she's broken that down among the various things I've mentioned. The large blue bar is the operating expenditures, then capital outlay from rates, and then debt service for the Public Works Trust Fund loan that we took out basically 16, 17 years ago for some major collection systems improvements that we did. And then finally, the capital projects that are funded by rates. So you can see that that's increasing, and as part of this analysis, we've looked closely at that. On the second page, you'll see a summary of the model itself. It basically, at the top, shows the either the actual or anticipated ERUs, new connections that we expect. This generates revenue for the utility in two ways. There's the actual monthly charge for the sewer that we factor in for the growth that we anticipate, and then, of course, the general facilities charge at $8,900 for 2022. And both things combined with our existing utility rates generates the sewer service charge revenue, which is the main part of the revenue for the sewer utility. We have some other things like utility tax and some other small things which all add up to the operating revenue line you see in the bold print there for 401. It's about $6.3 million for 2022. $4.1 million is the sewer service charges. We have been, in our 10-year outlook that Katie's been helping us with, making assumptions on how many new connections we will see over the decade. That we started this, the last major update was in 2019 when we did the sewer plan update. We were projecting 100 new services for a four-year period and then lowering that to 50 for the final final years of the plan. We have lowered that a bit with the downturn that we've seen in 2022. We haven't had near the amount of connections that we were participating previously. However, we had greater than we had projected for 2021. We ended up with about 140 new connections in 2021. So when you balance those out, it actually averages out to that 100 figure for that two-year period. But being on the conservative side, we have lowered what we had previous called for the period 2022 to 24 down to 70. And I feel pretty good about those numbers with what we see coming in the door, even though we're not seeing much in the way of permits right now. There's quite a few projects still in the pipeline, And one of these days, when the Fed stops raising rates, we would anticipate they'll start building again. So that's what's built into the model. And as we did all of this, what we determined was that in order to support the CIP and the increases in operating costs that we're anticipating, that a 4.0% increase is needed in the single-family rate for 2022. And then we've lowered that back down to 3% for subsequent years. We didn't go all the way down to 2%. But again, we look at that this every year. So as that as it changes year to year, we do adjust those future years. But for this particular budget period of 2022 to 23, it's 4% for 2022 recommended and 3% for 2023, and that's what we have built in into the structure. Just a couple of other things that are in the larger memorandum in your packet. I've noted some significant cost changes that we have in the utility. That's on page 2 of that memorandum. And we are adding a full-time operator. That's actually a vacancy in the utility that we didn't fill in 2022. However, we did hire a new administrative position there. So at the end of the day, we have an increase in the utility cost for one employee. And so I've noted that there. We are also planning to fund the assistant city engineer slash public works director position that it's going to be necessary for us to get filled as quickly as we can because of retirements that are coming up on the part of both myself and David Lee in the department in 2024. Really important to get somebody in place for that. The justification for funding that out of CIP, I did not include it in the significant increases as far as the rates. We're doing it out of the Fund 410, which is our general connection charges fee, is because we have about $800,000 in projects, collection system projects, to design and build in 2023. We generally have tried to do about $400,000 to $500,000 a year. Last year, due to workload for David and myself, we couldn't even touch that with the, you know, the $7 million building project and the intersection project and the other things David designed in-house. And we're looking at the same problem for 2023 if we don't get a body on board. And I don't really want to get too far behind on our collection system project updates, so it's important that we move forward. And we see we can fund that position 100% out of the 410 fund for the two-year period of this budget at least. After that, you'll have to need to re-look at that, but that's what we've done for the short term. Other major increases, biosolids disposal, which is about $120,000 or $30,000 a year cost, has gone up significantly, almost 30%. And we have to absorb that cost in our utility. We have to get rid of it, and we have to do it legally. And so we are, Kevin is looking at other ways of handling that. We are turning over all the rocks we can. We actually hope we can reduce this cost, but it is in the budget right now at the rate that Boulder Park has told us it's going to cost us to dispose of those biosolids in 2023. And then finally, the ER&R, as I already mentioned, we've experienced the equipment cost increases, and that had some impact on this utility as well. About $183,000 in additional increases. That actually is 4% of the utility O&M cost, which pretty much tells you, you know, why the 4% rather than 3. We did in our 23 budget look at 10% increase on a lot of the smaller items and 4% for 2023, and that all is covered in the overall budget. Of course, we had new services, and that offsets some of the costs, but the net increases we see is about 4%. Do you have any questions on the sewer part of this or anything else that I should look at or answer on that? So I mentioned the general facilities charge, and we're recommending basically the same percentage increase in that as well. And you'll see that again on page 2 of Katie's memo. It would go from $8,900 in 2020 through to $9,256 in 23. And, of course, that's the price paid by the developers that compensates our system for the capital projects to look forward to the plant upgrade that we're going to have to do in the not-too-distant future. And I probably should just say, again, you've heard this before, but in our capital plan, we have a two-step process we're doing. We're trying to make sure we can get all of the capacity that the existing plant is designed to do over the next 2 or 3 years. That was the reason for the building of the new laboratory operations building, which will allow us then next year to remove the old laboratory building and put the tank that's underneath of it in service that we haven't been able to use for the last 20 years. That's important to having the capacity that we're already permitted for. And we've made some other biosolids improvements, putting the new aerators in the digester tanks that we did 2 years ago. And we have two other projects. One is the demo and upgrading the tank with some new paddle aerators to go in that. And then finally, the following year, we'll be looking at replacing our blowers. They're all 22 years old now. We've had to do some repairs on them. They're old technology. There's new technology that we can get more efficient airflow into our digesters. That's important because we've been really pushed up against the wall on having enough capacity in our biosolid system for quite a while. And we're hoping that'll buy us another 3 or 4 years in the system. And that will be something that will just actually be done before another upgrade. We'd be doing it then as well. Those short-term projects we're funding from rate revenue. We're not borrowing any money for that. Looking for the day in a couple of years when that Public Works Trust Fund loan is paid off and looking for a facility plan about 24 and 25 that will lead into a new plant upgrade, which right now we're estimating at about $18 million. And that would be in 26 and 27. That's all going to be dependent on how fast we actually grow, because that's what's going to determine that when we get to either 85% of our flow capacity in gallons, a million gallons, or to 85% of our biological treatment. When we get to that point, ecology will tell us you need to start your facility plan and start planning to rebuild your plant or upgrade it to deal with that additional flow.
Just a real quick question, because I've heard you bring this up in our director's meeting, having to have to do with the weather and the increase in the rain that we have seen and the wind. How are you anticipating that impacting our plant?
Yes, and in fact, that was part of the driving force for getting that tank back in service, because what happens to us in these really high flow situations is we have two clarifiers right now. We keep one of them offline most of the year. But during high flow events, there's just so much throughput on water coming in. We can get an extra 300,000 or 400,000 gallons a day coming in. And we just need places to store that in the system so we can treat it properly. And so putting that tank back into service will really help with that. We've had occasions in the past where we had to just put it in service, and because the problem and the reason we haven't been able to use it is because of odors coming out of that tank into the office building made it unusable. It was a design flaw from, 20-plus years ago. We're now ready to be fixed with that and move forward with that, and that will give us that splurge of water capacity that we don't have right now. So, yeah.
May I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
So it looks like in the 4% increase is because inflation went up, and PSC recently raised their rates to 8.69 or something like that. So I'm seeing like substantial amounts. It's less than what I thought you guys were when I read it, what we would be looking at. But that would cover the needs with the rising, what we have in the rising cost.
Yeah, we've built in what we had anticipated to be the PSC increase. I didn't list that as an item here, but it is a fairly large number. But that is built into the 2023 budget.
So to understand this correctly, it looks like for the individual family per month would go up about $2.50, a little bit more than $2.50 a month.
Correct. In fact, if you turn back another couple pages, there's a detail sheet that will actually give you that increase. It's the sheet called
2.72.
Yeah, right. There you go. Yep.
No, thank you very much.
Yeah. And that projects all the way out for through this period as well. Thank you for asking that question. Okay, so again, recommending a 4% increase this year, which I hope that's actually good news for you, because when we're all looking at this 9.5% CPIs, and you know, that would be a big jump. Some of our sister agencies are likely going to be looking at more than about 6.5% increases. So anyway, that's the sewer utility. So solid waste utility, and I have our supervisor Leo Jacobs here with me, which will hopefully take some of the heavy lifting. Leo has prepared a couple of important documents. I gave you drafts of those in the council packet, and I've passed out tonight a memorandum called Issue FTE for Solid Waste. And Leo prepared this, and we kind of worked on it together on parts of it. But basically the short story on this is that we have just got at and we are beyond capacity with our existing crew in solid waste. You saw some of the growth figures in the sewer utility. They're the same for that. We've been seeing the same thing, and we've in the memorandum, you'll see that we have grown quite significantly, and this just covers back to 2019. Leo's been doing this for me for the city for 23 years, and when he started here, he had one less employee than he does today. And we did add an additional employee in another vehicle in 2015 when we took on added to our services for recycling and yard waste. And we actually, in adding that position, we had some capacity that allowed us to have that we banked towards these last 5 years. Well, we've used all of that up and then some. And how do I know that? Every time I call Leo, he's on a truck. Okay, and that's part of his job, is to cover the sick time and the vacations and stuff like that. But he's been on a truck most of the time lately, and he has other things to do. He also manages our fleet utility, and he takes care of the budgeting and writing memos like this. And so he doesn't have much time for that. He's just been busy, and that I've been watching that kind of ramp up over the last few years, and it's gotten particularly bad this year. And we're just at the point where we really need some help down here. We need another employee. So Leo's looked carefully at how we can do this without busting the bank. And what the proposal is, and the long and short of the memorandum, is that we believe that we have one of our solid waste rates that is significantly under market, and that is our curbside recycling. So Leo, do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Sure. So I've been doing a rate study to get the overall look on how our utility looks compared to other utilities, and then costing it out so we could be in comparisons with everyone else and still run things as tight as I like to do. So what I came up with on this is our recycling seems to be, it is under what all of our other agencies are doing and what the market is for recycling right now. I believe we're at $5.02, and most people or most other cities are up a little bit higher than that, in the $10 range, even higher. Mount Vernon just recently raised their rates from $5 or $4.95 to $10.99 or something like that. I have the numbers. But so that's where I think I can find that extra staff person. If we were able to get our numbers up a little bit from $5.02 up to, and if we were able to raise it $2.98, which is still under the market, we would be able to pay for that additional staff member. And I know it's a worse time to ask for this, but it is necessary at this time to add staff here as soon as it's reasonably possible. Some good things of what I've been finding out in my study that I've been doing is so where we're raising it a little bit higher in the recycling end of things, we're going to see our commercial rates if we do adopt this plan. And I'm going to work it out with Callie to make sure that we're not doing anything out of order, you know, and so we're able to pay for everything. But we'll see no increases in a lot of the commercial accounts. So over the years, they've creeped up, and we're going to be able to keep them at a nice steady rate from here on out. So our residential is growing. They kind of need to pick up a little bit more of the burden. That's kind of the nature of the beast, unfortunately. Commercials used to do the heavy lifting for that. But as we've been seeing over time, that residential needs to start paying for their fair share. And unfortunately, we've getting a lot of fortunately or unfortunately, we are getting a lot of residential customers in the area now. So I'm good with questions. If there's any particular questions you have or if you will...
Any questions for Lee?
I guess I would ask a question maybe for policy. Is there a rate number that we would then submit to the voters to vote on that rate? Is there a level of which that increase would go to, or is that something that, like, if it goes up 5%, would that automatically default to voters? Is that all within the council?
That's within council prerogative on setting the utility rates, and basically, you know, the utility has to pay for itself; it has to support itself, and so that's within the purview of the council to act on this, and that's what we've done on an annual basis.
And then, if I can ask one more question on the increase this year on the gas prices, because like a year ago we were about $1 under, or maybe $1.40 under. What does that cost increase look like for you guys this year? I know that your job is driving the entire time heavy machinery.
Yeah, I mean, are you looking for a percentage increase? I mean, or would it?
Well, like if you spent, you know, $10,000 last year, and this year you're looking at spending $15,000 or $12,000, something like that.
Well, I can tell you in terms of we have built into this utility a fuel surcharge. And so that surcharge is coming in at about $70,000 this year. And that represents the additional cost of fuel that we've seen pretty well. So that's actually one thing within the utility that balances out somewhat, because we do have the surcharge, and so the increases in costs, they're kind of covered by that. Cool. So they're in, and I didn't list that, again, back in the council memorandum, I didn't list fuel costs as part of the significant increases because of that, because we kind of do balance that out with the surcharge on this particular utility.
Normally, it is right around $60,000 to $68,000, depending on the market, because it can go up and down. But it has been significantly higher this year.
So about $6,000 a month.
I'm sorry.
About $6,000 a month, then,
give or take. Yes.
Councilman Owen or Diamond, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I had a question.
Go ahead.
I had a question for Leo. I asked you, Leo, to figure out how much the recycle program has cost the city in the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years. You know, and I know, recycle is a dead horse. There's no market. There'll never be another market for recycle. And we're running like I don't know what a truck costs, probably a three-quarter, at least $500,000, but you got a truck and a driver hauling this over to recycle, and I don't know what they do with it. There's no market. The milk jugs and your few tin cans and the mail garbage and stuff like that, but it's a losing process, and I hate to see the rate on that raised. The rest of the utilities I can go along with because they're necessary. We have to have garbage removal and the sewer, of course. But I'll just be honest with you, Leo. I think that recycle is we're just pouring more money into it for no reason, just for the purpose of keeping it. That's just my opinion. It's nothing personal. It's a fact, and you know it's a fact.
So, Chuck, this is Mark. I just wanted to kind of let you know a couple of things in our discussions on recycle. This recommended rate increase on recycle more or less gets it up into the realm of the municipal solid waste rates. So, in effect, we're handling it equivalent to that by doing this. And it's covering parts of the utility that need to be covered. Recycle is mandatory. It's not an optional program. It's something that we have to do, and our ratepayers have to pay it. It's not something we can just say we're not going to do that anymore. We still have to handle the waste that's generated regardless. Right now we've been handling it, you know, we have been sort of, I wouldn't say subsidizing it, but we were not up to market, and that's part of what our recommendation is tonight, to raise that up to where it should be, and that will fund this position that we're needing to add to that utility so that we can handle the volume of solid waste that we have, whatever you want to call it. If you want to call it recycle or municipal solid waste, we still have to handle it. It's still got to be picked up and hauled to the dump, and we pay for it. The tipping fees and stuff. So this actually more or less solves the problem. But we haven't forgot what you ask us to do. It's just that we've been in the midst of the budget cycle and we have not been able to get that done yet. I owe Kelly the work that we've done already on this, and then she's going to do her crunching and grinding on that. And we'll have a report back to you on that. But in the meantime, this what we're proposing tonight in terms of the rate adjustments would allow us to get the utility up to where it needs to be and to cover the increasing volume of waste that we're having to handle because of the growth of the city. It's pure and simple what it is. We've grown. We're to the point where we need to add additional capacity on our on the part of our staff to be able to handle that.
Yeah, well, I just hate to see four and more money into a dead horse. I don't know what the other cities, I haven't checked, but I will check and see what they do about recycle. Sometimes you might have to put some feelers out to farming something out if you can save money. That's the name of the game, is money. And money comes out of my pocket and my constituents' pockets. And all I'm trying to do is save them some money. But Leo does a good job. I work for him. He's a good man to work for, and I know he does the best he can. But I just want to see some figures when you get that figured out. And maybe I'll come down off of my high horse too.
Chuck. Councilman. Yeah, Chuck Owens. I'm going to be working on that after the budget cycle here, and we'll I'll get a nice. Well, I mean, I'll get a presentation out, and then the council can take a look at it, and we can make decisions after the first of the year or after budget, whatever you'd like. I'll get those numbers for you, too.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Councilman Burns and then Councilman McGoffin.
I was just curious. I assume that we pay by the ton for getting rid of garbage or recycling.
Yes.
How much do you know roughly how much each of those costs per ton?
Yes, exactly. So the county charges us $101 a ton for garbage, and recycling is $196 a ton right now. And we do more information, but it's about 745 tons of recycling. And it depends on how much garbage, but that can fluctuate anywhere between 700 and 850. And we're really high this year because a lot of roll-offs and a lot of commercial action's been happening.
Gotcha. Thank you.
If you don't mind, I'd like to answer Councilman Lavaca real quick. So in 2021 for the fuel diesel, we did $71,500 in fuel costs. And 2022 is more like about $104,000 right now.
Okay, thank you. So, Councilman McGoffin?
Okay, thank you. Just a couple of quick questions. I've noticed the transfer station's been having some shutdowns lately. Does that affect us? And at what point do we have like a contingency plan if they can't accept it?
Well, luckily, we do have a little pull with them because we haul so much material to them, and we have a certain amount of, all of our citizens have to be serviced every single day. So they keep it open for us. So when they close it for the public, they still have a sliver of space out there for us. Our backup plan, that is what we've been pushing the county for. So SWAC is, we have a SWAC, a solid waste governance board, basically, and we're going to have a chat with the county, and because they are the ones that need to come up with a backup plan on what to do and try to avoid these. Of course, I have ideas, but the county is the county. They need to formulate it themselves.
Yep, gotcha. And then just to go off of Chuck's question, or Council Member Allen's question, or Owens, if we didn't do recycling, we would still be required to have somebody do it, but we wouldn't be able to control their pricing. Is that correct? So, like, if we hired a contractor to do it, they could set their pricing. So if we're trying to save, you know, the people of Cedar Woolley money, they could raise their rates at whatever rate they would want, correct?
Yes. So if we did hire Waste Management, we got it from Waste Management in 2015, and I kind of saw that a little bit as the issue is we wouldn't have control of our materials, and then we wouldn't have control of the pricing. So we got it from them in 2015. But what we're seeing now with Waste Management is they're going back to all the municipalities that they have contracts with, and they're saying, oh, it's, you know, active whatever to, you know, act of God, we got to get these price increases up. And you're seeing it with Mount Vernon right now. So they are up at $10, and I want to say it's $10.98 or something like that. So that's what we would be looking at if we didn't have control of it ourselves. It would be, you'd be faced with what are we going to do with the customers? We're going to have to give them $8 increase right now. So, and I don't know, I'm a little frugal when it comes to this. So I was like, if we could do it a little bit at a time, I know things are hurting right now, so I just want to do it the best we can. And I'm still trying to get an employee in the mix. So I know it hurts, but it helps a little bit at the same time. Did that answer?
Yes, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So just a couple of things to point out to you. In the packet I gave you, there's a couple of other attachments. One of them's a 2022 utility rate comparison, and that'll actually give you the numbers for curbside recycle as well as municipal solid waste there. If you see that, I've got Cedar Woolley is in gray highlight there. This is 2022 rates. And so are all the other agencies as well. And like Leo mentioned, you'll see Mount Vernon's in at $10.99 in 2022. All of the other agencies are going to be increasing these rates as we are planning to. So this is a snapshot of back this current year. The average for all of these agencies is $10.55. We're proposing to go to $8. We'd still be under that by a couple. And we would come back to you in 2024 and look at that again, or 2023 for 2024, and we'd probably have another incremental increase in this particular line at that time as well. But for this one, we're proposing $8, an increase of $2.98. You also see the sewer and stormwater comparisons on here as well, if you're curious about all of those and where we rank in the whole overall thing, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a minute. The other spreadsheet you have in there is an 11 by 17 sheet, which is the actual rate increases that we proposed to you. The main one, as we've mentioned, is the $2.98 increase for curbside recycle, which is highlighted on that spreadsheet. And you can see the generated revenue for 2023 towards the right is $138,463 with that increase. And then it would go up again, and if we increased from 8 to 9 and 24, which is what the proposal is, it would go up another $46,000 at that time. The other rates that we've proposed to increase are various toter sizes in the residential side. These amount to about a 4% increase as you look at them. They do vary from can to can. Leo had two intents with this, which we've tried to do in our rates overall. not only do we look at how we can cover the cost of the utility, we also want to make sure we're not getting too far out of kilter with our neighboring agencies. And so his intention here was to make sure we didn't raise any individual rate that is already too high. He mentioned on the commercial that we actually have been a bit above market on all of those for quite a while. So they're not increasing that much. There's a couple minor ones. There are some increases in the residential side of things. And you can see all of those on there, and then I've got the dollars that are generated in the right-hand side of that. Just as an overall summary on what that does, the proposed increases would generate about $175,000 in revenue in 2023. That's about 8.1% of the utility, of which 6.3% is for that curbside recycle increase. So that's the vast majority of this. So it's less than 2% increase on the rest of the utility overall. Again, it does vary by classification, but in terms of the average, it's less than 2% on the general utility. And then back to the memorandum again, what does that cover? That covers the added full-time operator, which Leo's memo recommends, at about $106,000. It covers the county tipping fee increases, which I didn't mention before, but that's going up as well, does every year, about $17,000. And then, as I mentioned, we have the ER&R impacts of equipment, and that went up $65,000 as well. So added about $188,000 to the cost of the utility, which we're covering by these increases that we've recommended. So I think overall, in the grand scheme of things, the intention to add a needed employee is covered by raising up in the main that one particular curbside recycle rate, and with some minor increases to the other parts of this.
So all right, does that about sum it up?
Well, yes, it does. Oh, I was just going to add to that that the cost of vehicles have been skyrocketing, as you well know, too. So it's that's why the ER&R has been going up so tremendously. So all the extra rules that they're putting on the vehicles now. So.
Yeah, we're experiencing that right across the board, so I can appreciate that. I want you to know, though, that we appreciate you, Leo, you and your team. You obviously put the public, you think about them as you're putting these rates together, and we greatly appreciate that. I think I speak on behalf of the council when I say that you were very thoughtful. You could have easily just gone along with the norm, what everybody else was doing, but you have not, so thank you.
Thank you
for your work. Thank you to your staff as well.
Thank you. I'll let them know.
And thank you, Mark. Thank you very much. Great explanation.
So the last utility I need to talk about with you is Fund 421-425, the stormwater utility. In past years, we've generally mirrored the increases that we've determined for sewer and solid waste in this utility. And I am proposing to mirror what we're doing in sanitary sewer with this as well, with a 4% increase for 2023 and back to 3% in 24. We've looked at this carefully, Kelly and I, and looked at revenues. One thing that works in our favor on this, and to the sewer to an extent as well, because we have had close to 200 services added in the last 2 years with a combination of the higher in 21 and a little lower in 2022, our actual revenue coming in is higher than we had budgeted. And so we were able to take advantage of that in looking at the cost of the utility. Additional cost increases, I have those summarized in the packet memorandum again. This is where we're putting the other half of the full-time employee that council's approved for the Public Works Operations Division. Half of that's going to Fund 101, which I think we want to talk about a little bit when I get done with these. The other half is landing in this utility. It's about a $41,000 hit for each of those funds. The other things that are in the increases we're seeing is about $24,000. Nathan had moved the operating costs for the street sweeper that we run around town pretty much all the time now. It used to be 3 days a week, but we're pretty much running it every day. that keeps the leaves off of the out of the curbs and out of the catch basins, and so that's legitimately a stormwater expense. We've been charging most of that labor to this utility for some years, but the equipment, the sweeper, still resided in the street utility, and so we needed to true that up so the costs were where they should be. So the costs went up somewhat to this utility for that, moving the fuel costs and the maintenance costs for that equipment, essentially. And the last thing is, there was a major, I've mentioned this a number of times in the past that this was coming. At the state level, they have, I should say it's more or less an unfunded mandate. They require us to assume the inspection of the private commercial entities that discharge water that from their facilities that could be polluted by their operations. And so it's called source control, and they're requiring us to monitor all of those businesses in the city on an annual basis to make sure that they're not providing or putting pollutants into the waters of the state. We, some years ago, and those who have been here a while would know, we actually, when we hired Wally Hoyt, part of the reason we hired him was to act as our source control inspector. We were given a grant at that time to develop that program. Of course, the state took that data and said, well, the agencies did such a good job on it. Now they get to do it for no additional money. So what we've decided to do, and we have worked with the other agencies in Skagit County and the county themselves to come up with a team that is going to do that inspection and the documentation that the state requires. And what's going to happen is the county has agreed to hire a full-time employee for that and to buy the software and the hardware that it takes to do the monitoring. They will do the inspections for all of the agencies. We will have an interlocal agreement with them that will reimburse them for the cost of that. And the estimated cost of that is $40,000 a year. So that's another expense that we did not have in this utility before, but we have to come up with the money to cover. So all of those numbers that I just mentioned to you add up to about $104,000, which is about a 12.5% increase on O&M over what we had before. As I mentioned, we're recommending a 4% increase this year and a 3 next. Obviously, we're not recovering all of that, but because the utility has, the revenue has increased because of the additional services, it works. And Kelly's watching me on all of this, and she's raising her hand if she doesn't buy something, and we're going to be looking at this again. But that's what the recommendation is that we increase 4% for 23 and 3% for 24. So that's pretty much my utility presentation. If you have any more questions on that, I'd be glad to try to cover them.
Madam Mayor, Councilman Lavaca?
One more or a question here. So the overall rate will be 8.1% on all utilities in Cedar Woolley plus fuel surcharge if fuel prices continue to rise.
Well, the 8.1 was strictly on the 412.
Just on the 412.
On solid waste.
All right.
For sewer and for stormwater, it's 4%.
Okay. Yeah. So it's 4% on that one and 8.1 on the other. So the overall average of those, I guess, somebody could just look at their bill and
probably about, yeah, well, actually, I looked at that. It's about 6%.
6%. Okay. And then on the inspector for each site going around annually, that is going to be something where Skagit County has somebody for, or that Cedar Woolley will have their own person and then?
Yeah, to avoid us having to hire another employee, a full-time employee, to do that, or to try to do it within our existing staff, which we simply don't have the capacity for it, we elected to band together. Skagit County will hire the employee, pay their benefits, and all of the rest of that. We will reimburse them for that. You haven't seen that ILA yet, but it's going to be coming to you fairly shortly for that, to put that system in process. Obviously, we have to cover it in our budget first. So as you adopt the budget, that $40,000 included in the 425-23 costs estimate we have. So,
and then the last question, it looks like this the increase is strictly for operational cost. And that's pretty much what this is for 2023 going on. We'll see 2024 looks like less than that. You're hopefully things settle down, the dust settles with their CPI and whatnot. But
right, yeah. And like I say, we assume 3 rather than 4 and 20 for 24 in the biannual budget. And we'll look at it again. That'll come to you. We have to do this every year in terms of it's by ordinance that we adjust these utility rates. And in fact, I should say on the follow-up, I will send this memo back to you for the November, what's the date, Kelly? I've forgotten. November 9th council meeting for a first read on this. And so, and if you have any questions in the meantime, I'm always available to take those. But that's the long and short.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Councilwoman Kesty?
Thank you. I just wanted to echo Mayor Johnson in thanking you guys for your thoughtfulness to the constituents and everything. You're doing a wonderful job, so thank you.
Appreciate that.
Okay. Councilman Allen?
I would like to thank Kelly just for making this so readable.
I'll take the compliment.
I believe that was Leo and Mark. That was wonderful.
I do have just one thing to add to Councilman Zlavaka's question. The consultant for the sewer also takes into consideration all that future work. So we have a separate reserve fund for all those, you know, the $18 million project coming up, so we can limit our debt service when that comes. So these rates take into consideration operations as well as our future needs and long-term needs of the city. So just wanting to include that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's great addition, great additional information. Okay, if that is it. We will move on to the next item, which is the 2023-2024 budget follow-up. Again, thank you, Mark and Leo.
Okay. Bill, do you have the – did you get my slides? So everybody should have – who's here in person should have a packet of information. I'm going to try not to look behind me too much. But on the second slide – just want to go over our objectives today. Main thing is to answer questions. So we have just some answers to questions from prior meetings, and then to go over some property tax items one more time. And then in upcoming meetings, the next meeting, November 9th, we hope to get a first read of the budget ordinance, and then a second read of property tax. The third meeting, I guess, this month on the 22nd, second read of the budget ordinance. And if needed, if we don't pass something at the next meeting, we'll take another read of property tax. So that's the plan moving forward. So on slide 3, here's just summary of some questions and answers. One of the questions we got at the Finance Committee was how many years does the city have left on the City Hall loan, so building this building? Our last payment is scheduled in 2048. We pay extra on the city loan, so likely cut that down by approximately four years, so 2044, but we have till 48 to pay that off. Also included, just a summary of some of our other significant debt. Mark referenced the sewer fund and some of the prior sewer projects. Those are the last three there, paying off very soon, 2025, 2026, and 2027. So just a little bit more information for you there. Also got a question about the Parks Fund and how the Parks Fund is funded. And it's funded from several different sources. Operations is technically, the Parks Fund is a part of the general fund. So just to manage that fund, we separately track it in a Parks and Facilities Fund. But it the operations and day-to-day activity is funded from the general fund. We just designate a portion of property tax to go into that. But it's not set by any restrictions how much property tax goes into that. It's really a function of the general fund and balancing those with all the other general fund needs. Capital projects tend to be funded from other sources. Majority of the capital projects in 23 and 24 are funded by ARPA, so the American Rescue Plan Act. This is the one-time federal money we got in and are using big chunks of this to cover some of our parks projects. We also fund capital projects through other state and federal grants. Those state and other federal grants, when we receive those, generally those are restricted, that we've applied for a grant and this is the only purpose we can use for that grant money. We have, I think it's $500,000. Does that sound right, Mayor? Mm-hmm.
That came in from both RCO.
Right.
And then also from, actually from Larson.
Yes. So those types of funding sources are restricted. We can't take those and use those for other funds. Also fund capital projects through real estate excise tax. This is money we get in that also has a restricted purpose. We generally use it for park projects and street projects. They have to be done on construction. And then finally, in 23 and 24, we're also, as we discussed previously, we're also using some of the Council Strategic Reserve to fund the remaining operations that aren't covered by the general fund. Any questions?
I have a question. It could be silly, but we're paying extra on the loan. Because we might be a little bit hurting right now, what if we didn't use that money extra this year and use that money for like the car that they need or something else instead? Would that not be an option?
You can move more. Yeah, the council strategic reserve is up to the council's discretion. It's historically $50,000 been used to decrease our interest over time. But yes, it could be used for that purpose.
And how much was the car that he needed? He was talking.
Cost of a car without the radio, $77,500. That's what our cost would be. We have a radio for it already.
Okay. I was just curious.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions on that one? Next question we got was what was removed from the 2022 budget, and I'll let Charlie talk about this a little bit.
Yeah, I was definitely here for more of this than Kelly was. So when we sat down initially and through council budget amendment in particular, the work release program is one of the things that we removed. It was underutilized going into COVID, so the numbers were dropping of participants in the program. Variety of reasons for that. And then it got suspended, of course, during COVID. Some cities have started to bring it back. I believe Mount Vernon's back up and running, for example. Burlington hasn't had this type of program for a while. But rebooting it would require, there are fewer people available in the program. Again, it's a variety of reasons, but one of them is the nature of folks in the jail and them choosing not to be interested in work release versus staying in the jail. Some of it has to do with the violent offenders in the jail not being eligible for this kind of option. So if we were to restart it, we would have to hire a bunch of folks. We would not have a lot of participants in the program. So staff's recommendation and the reason why the council actually removed this through a budget amendment, we'd have to put it back in. But our recommendation is to just keep that out. And so that's what we've done so far. So that was out. The state lobbyist, the mayor and I talked about the state lobbyist contract about mid-year. That ended, I believe it's the end of June. So we terminated that contract. So we saved some money for that we would have paid for the remainder of 22, and then we're saving money as well in 23. The annual benefit is $24,000 to the general fund by not having that contract. And not a reflection on Mr. Strooley's work, simply a budget decision that we felt we needed to make. And then the underspending some of the money we had for professional services in the executive department for HR, we were able to do that with our classification and compensation study. And then we went on, and I believe it's on the next slide in 23, to, and don't forward the slide yet, Bill, but soon, to actually reduce that budget further. So that budget's down to 10,000 in 23 and 24 going forward. And then the parks portion of the new vacant position, I believe this, Mark, was just a decision to defer the hire on that position until we're trying to sync it up more with Olmsted Park and additional park space coming on. And then the reality of budgets, and this is why it was a hard question to answer, is that they're not static. You know, they're a plan when we put them in motion. And even now, and Kelly and I have already had this conversation, things are changing in the 23 and 24 budgets that we've already proposed to you because we're learning new information. When we put it together, for example, we didn't know Puget Sound Energy's rate increase and what it exactly would be. And there are a variety of other things that are always shifting. So that will happen all through next year as well. That's why budget amendments are a common occurrence, relatively common occurrence. And we need to generally go and bring those to you when there's something really major that shifted in the budget, or when, for whatever reason, and there could be a lot of them, including big capital projects, we're going to spend more than we had planned on in a fund in particular. So you'll see those throughout the year. Time off and on, depending upon, you know, what level of activity, but typically at least a couple of times a year. So things are always shifting, and so we're doing our best to manage through that and keeping our fingers on the pulse of the budget in terms of monitoring to see how we're doing and keeping an eye on what those things are that are shifting and then choosing to underspend certain things when we need to. It's a good, generally a good practice to budget your revenues conservatively, and we do that. So not assume you're going to have a windfall when you don't know for sure. And also to budget your expenses with a little bit of roundup, just a little tiny bit, not a lot, but just a little bit more. And we look at our historic averages to try to figure out what's the right number. For example, for overtime in the PD, we had a discussion about the amount of money we had in there and could we reduce that because we hadn't exceeded that amount of money spent in a long time. Now, by doing that, we didn't take it all the way down, but we just took it down to kind of the max of what you'd see over maybe a 5-10-year average. We recognize that something big could happen at some point. There could be a huge call out, and we may burn through our OT budget for the year. And if and when that happens, we're going to need to compensate in other areas of the general fund. And so that's how we work as a team to do that. But keeping all of that money in the budget just in case is something we try to really manage so we don't do that all across the board. That's definitely a practice that will lead to budgetary difficulties. So that's my long-winded answer to 22. I hope that helps. And I know that's, Brendan, thank you. I know you've asked a couple of times for that. So thanks for your patience on that one.
Okay, and the next slide is just some information about what we removed from 2023-2024. These are things we discussed previously but are just here in writing. So they're included in the slides, but also that separate sheet summarizes all of them. As we've previously discussed, the police vehicles going from replacing 3 annually to 2. The executive department professional service, Charlie just went over. We also removed a new position we were hoping to get, which was a kind of a formal city clerk. A big part of that would relieve some of the pressure from the finance department as well as reduce the city's risk for any public records requests. That would be handled centrally. So we kind of pushed that out to rethink for 2025-2026 budget. One of the positive changes we made that was approved by council just last week, or a couple weeks ago, last month, we removed some of the fire hydrant maintenance with our interlocal agreement with Skagit PUD. So that was a real positive change through the budget process. We also removed the full-time mechanic and continuing with part-time mechanic, although, again, we'll have to reconsider this for 25-26. And as Mark mentioned, the new engineering position going to the utilities. And then finally, just gave some estimates, like Charlie said, some of it's just trimming here and there and kind of hard to pinpoint all the items. But that's a summary of some of the items we removed to get the budget to where it is today.
Are there any questions on those? All right.
I'm just wondering. So we didn't have a city clerk position, but we're removing that from the budget. So that it kind of reduces the amount we have in the budget. There are things in 2022 you listed that we did have in the budget that we were able to reduce that cost versus hypothetical expenditures versus the actual things that we took out. And that's what the difference of the 2022 and then the 23-24 is?
The 2022 chart are things we took out or didn't or initially had budgeted but that had to be removed.
I believe we did amendments on those. We did budget amendments. Yeah, actually came before you.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering, those are the items that were removed from the actual budget. So we have overall this much, and we're reducing the budget. So those were the items that came out. And then also with, like, positions that they weren't filled or we didn't have them, but we decided not to pursue them. So now that's out of the budget.
That's correct.
Yeah, just to be really clear on 22 as well, in a few cases, those were under expenditures of existing money that still stayed in the budget until we got to the 23-24 budget process. So an example of that would be that HR professional services line item. We underspent it by $20,000, but then we took out, so there was still $50,000, you know, there that we could have spent. And then that $50,000, when we looked at the 23 budget, we said, well, we don't need that much, and we need to cut budget. So we got it down to 10. So we've still got money if we need it. And I mean, we might be down to 5 even. I may have underdid that one. But we're down there quite a ways. We've got enough if we need something, but we're not planning to do much of anything in that area for now.
And when we say things we remove from 2023, 2024, these are things that each of the departments has budget proposals. So that was the starting point, is each department assessing their needs and how the budget can help best fulfill those needs. And then this is what we had to remove from those requests to meet the financial needs of the city.
Just one more thing to throw in there. In future years, it'll be a little bit easier to track budget to budget, really how much of an expenditure are we looking at. We had some ARPA funds in our budget in 22 that we moved out to a separate fund. So those cloud the budget just a little bit that you see for 22 and even part of 21. So that will shift and hopefully help.
If I can just make one quick comment regarding that. So we actually spent 2 afternoons, one I think was about 3 or 4 hours and the other was about the same. So we've spent 6-7 hours, everybody, all the department heads at the table and going through page by page, line item by line item, and cutting and reducing and cutting and reducing. So there was a lot of time that has been spent trying to get this budget to a place that will work so that we can move forward at least in 2023 knowing we're covered.
One last comment. My own personal philosophy is when we do a budget process, and I've been a part of a lot of these now, we want our directors to think freely. So I've been in places where there's real strict guidance, and it's like you just need to cut this much out of your budget. But we want our folks to think freely so that we can get the best ideas out on the table and have a dialogue about those. And so that's part of what you see here. The city clerk position that we took out, yes, it was in that preliminary budget. But as we got in there and saw how out of balance we were, it was like, all right, some of these new ideas have to go. So some of them did, but some of them stuck, and some other stuff went. And that's the beauty of the process. So an example of something that is in there that is going to help, and I'm going to point over to Dan again, but it's the Axon, I always forget what it's called, but it's the automatic.
The auto-tagging for evidence.com for body cam videos. It'll free up time for officers to be more out on the road rather than coming back to the office and labeling videos. So it's a minimal cost, but it helps.
Yeah, fantastic idea that if we had just had a stifling budget process where we said nothing new, we wouldn't have necessarily gotten that idea out on the table in front of you and gotten it implemented. So we're excited about things like that. There are little things sprinkled throughout the budget like that and some bigger ideas as well and some real needs like the senior engineer position that's going to really help us with succession planning and those projects Mark mentioned.
Any other questions before we move on? Okay. Move on to property tax. So on slide 7, this is just a repeat of last time. Our property tax recommendations, again, for 2023, we recommend taking the 1 year of banked capacity in the 1%, and this is due by the end of November. So we're coming up on that, and rather submit a little bit early to the county is our hope. And then 2024 also recommend the 1% increase, although we don't have to make a decision on that until this time next year. So the next couple of slides, just wanted to provide some information and some examples of individual properties around town's property tax. Councilman Burns, thank you for bringing this up last time about the state's portion. So you can see in there, on average, it can vary a little bit from property to property, but on average, the state's percentage of property tax is about 26%. The school district takes the largest percent at 33%, and then the city has approximately 21%. And those percentages, again, can vary from year to year. We have no control over the other jurisdictions' property tax. So this is just one first one is just an example of a $307,000 property. On the next slide, you can see the breakouts are going to be the same for 2022. This is a $361,700 property, a little bit more in property tax. And then the final example on slide 10 is kind of a higher end home, $624,100 in there. Property tax there. So really this is just information for you to have and can look back on later if you need examples for that. On slide 11 is a summary of those same three properties and an estimate of how our proposed or our recommended property tax would adjust just the city's portion of those. These are just better estimates than provided before. Earlier, we were estimating the city's value of all land. We have a little bit firmer numbers from the county now, but these are still estimates. So just want to give you those numbers on those three properties. Example one would change about $22 a year. Example two, $33 a year, and example three, $16 a year is our estimate. So again, just want to have those numbers for you if you need to refer back to them. On slide 12, we had discussed exemptions on property tax. I wanted to provide an example. This is an example of a homeowner who applied for the exemption and received it. So their current property tax for 2022 is just under $1,000. Without exemptions, it would be just over $4,000. This isn't just one example of that. And on the next page is just some more information. I pulled this from the Department of Revenue, which the county relies on. There's three levels of exemption. Again, this is just for your reference and to go back to it if you need it. I won't go over them too much in detail, but based on the questions and comments in previous council meetings, Bill and I added a section on the website, Frequently Asked Questions, and provided a link to the county website for anyone who needs that service and wants to access the county's website to receive any of those exemptions. So we included those for reference.
Before you go on, I just want to make sure, because I cannot see them online, but I just want to make sure that Councilman Owen or Councilwoman Diamond do not have questions. If you do, this would be opportunity. Okay, does this sound like it? Go ahead.
All right, so the final slide is some possible reductions if we don't pass the recommended property tax, and we have to cut somewhere. So these are just reduction considerations. A couple of areas that parks position we talked about, the parks and stormwater position, may have to consider not filling that. There's a vacant police officer position as well. So these aren't all, like, we wouldn't do all of these things, but all kind of on the board. The new senior/assistant engineer, if the utility rate recommendations aren't implemented, we would have to take a look at that. And then as well as some other smaller service reductions or eliminations. So want to give the full understanding of the property tax recommendation.
Madam Mayor.
Yes, Councilman Allen.
A couple questions for you. All these potential reductions could occur because we're not taking our potential up 1% or banking or collecting?
Yes. I mean, we wouldn't implement all of them.
Well,
they're
new
just
park, storm position, vacant police officer, new senior. I mean, you can pick from any, but are we going to generate $163,000 or $130,000-some or $126,000? Couple positions with a 1%?
No, we would not, but like we presented previously, the general fund is really tight. And Charlie said we don't build in huge cushions. We try and be realistic with our expenditures. What do we really think we're going to spend? And then just build a little bit more on that. So if something unexpected happens, we will be in the red in the general fund. Which we can sustain for a year or two. It's not sustainable for our long term. So if we can't continuously increase property tax at that minimal level in a couple years, we're not going to be able to fund those positions. And it's really difficult to hire a position not knowing if you're going to be able to fund it in 2024, 2025, 2026.
Okay. And the second question, do we collect property tax on churches, federal, state buildings? Do we assess a property tax if we give a raise or, you know, increase it and all that? Are they paying anything right now?
I know federal property does not. Charlie, do you know, have a better answer to this?
Yeah, we do not tax those entities at this point. Some cities, and we've actually had an agreement that we're aware of that's going to expire at the end of this year, will have payments in lieu of taxes types of agreements with organizations. We had one with a port, for example, that has been funded by Department of Enterprise Services up at the Swift Center. That one's expiring. That's for fire service. So occasionally you see things like that, but no, not as a standard.
A few years ago, I mean, there's some religious affiliated things downtown. They don't pay a property tax.
That's correct. Religious institutions do not pay property taxes.
So one thing that we do know, and I just want to reiterate, and I thought Councilman McGoffin said it beautifully at the last council meeting, that is that the 1% doesn't even begin to cover the increase in the interest rates that are happening. But moreover is the compound interest. So what we lose in compound interest because we're not collecting these is a great deficit to the city. And Kelly, I don't know if you want to address that, talk a little bit about that, or Charlie, because that does have a lot of impact. You're talking about collecting these fees, and it sounds minimal, but when you add it up over the years, it compounds and it becomes quite significant for the city and allows us to move forward and do things.
Madam Mayor, when you exempt a lot of people for many years, that compounds also.
I hear you, but I do believe that a lot of religious institutions they're already exempt by the state. I don't know that we have a say-so in that. The city doesn't have a say-so in that, as I understand it. But I think that if we address what we're looking at right now, which is what I was stating, is that we really need to look at not just what's happening this year, but the following year and the year after that, the longevity. What are we going to do to sustain the city? That's what I think we need to be looking at as a council.
Well, if I could ask Charlie, can you bring a projected revenue stream over the next 5 years or so? Assuming the 1%, or you can do it, Kel.
we would work together on that. Kelly would do a lot of the heavy lifting. Okay, yes, we can definitely bring you that.
You know, I'd like to see some hard numbers and what we, if we have to do what I don't want to do, is find out what we're giving up in exemptions to certain groups and agencies. Thank you.
All right. Yes, go ahead. Councilman Burns.
I was curious. I think you had it on a graph last time, if you know off the top of your head, Kelly. How many years in the 2000 range to, I think it was like 18, that they did not do a tax increase? Is that right?
Yes, it was. Was it 2005 to 2018? But I can, we have that information, so we can get that out.
Okay, I'd appreciate that because I bet that that comes out to quite a large number that we had lost out on from that long period of time as well. So we're kind of adding to the loss from inflation each year and behind the eight ball now because of that long period of time where they didn't collect anything extra.
Exactly.
So that's got to be damaging to the city's ability to provide for the people.
Exactly.
Thank you.
I just wanted to thank you for adding the exemptions and making it for everyone to be able to see so that people can get to it easily and find out if that's something that can help them. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing it up. And it was a pretty quick thing for us to add and provide more access to our citizens. So thank you.
I just wanted to add the exercise we did in trimming the budget. Really, it's almost always really effective in the first year. It gets not as effective in future years. So that's part of our concern. We'll keep doing it because that's our job as professionals, but we won't likely find the kind of money we found this first time. So that's why we're concerned, and that's why we appreciate the council's conversation here.
Councilman McGoffin, did you have?
I just had a question regarding, like, your experience at other cities. Has there ever been a time that it's not recommended to a council to take the 1%? It seems like this is something that is a common occurrence across all the cities that they have to talk about. In your experiences, what have you had?
Yeah, I cannot remember a year where we haven't, in the cities I've been involved with, in about a 20-year time frame here in Washington, where we haven't recommended the council allow revenues to grow by 1% for the property tax. Is there a time where that might be the case? I believe there probably is, depending upon property values. If they're depreciating, there can be some scenarios you might be able to imagine where that would make some sense to not do that. But fortunately, that hasn't happened in my experience.
And like we talked about last week, there are measures in place to allow, not allow cities to take the 1%. The IPD, if it's another measure of inflation, if it's below 1%, you can only take up that amount. So there are some things in state law that limit our ability to take 1%, and which are good indications of whether it should even be recommended or not. So last time we talked about that, for the current year, I believe it was, the IPD was in the 7%, which again is a good measure that this is a good recommendation this year.
Okay, if there's nothing else, Kelly, did you want to add anything else, or Charlie? If not, we're going to move on.
Only thing is, we'll be reaching out to see if you have any further questions or want to talk about anything one-on-one. I'm available for that in the next 2 weeks. So just want to give you the heads up on that.
Okay, and Councilman Diamond, yes?
I was just going to make a comment in that thank you, everybody, for putting all of this stuff together. There's a lot of information here, finding budget cuts and doing all of that. I see where the need is coming from, and that we do owe our citizens here proper services, and that is, in fact, a requirement there, and the costs are going up, and it's completely unavoidable in some aspects. The one thing I am concerned with and I don't agree with is adding that banked 1%, as a council. I believe, you know, it was voted, against last year. So that 1% and then the 1% again is 2%. I understand that that's different, but I do think that we do need to respect the decision of the council from the last go round for that. So that's my opinion on that.
All right. Thank you.
Councilman Owen?
Well, I don't have anything to say. I haven't heard anything you're going to change my mind, but I think it's just a property tax is just a convenience to the tax collectors, you know. It's there. There's 1%, we'll go get that. Well, you got to talk about other things. There's always more cuts you can do. You know, I never hear that word cut. But I feel I've got a lot of sympathy for people that's really hurting out there, and the way that the recession's going, and it's going to take a lot of people out. I mean, they're barely living on the edge. It's easy to sit here with the city and say, well, we'll take this or that from the general public. But I'm sorry. I can't see that. It's just a convenience to go and get a few more dollars. And even without it, the city's going to be fine. You're not going to tell me otherwise. I mean, they'll survive. They're just fine. Now, there's other places you can go and cut things. So I'm just opposed to more property taxes. It goes on every year, 1%, 2%. And pretty soon it's going to add up to 10, 15%. I mean, it's always there. It don't go away. It just keeps climbing up. And some of these people, their salaries keep going down, and inflation keeps gnawing away at them. And I just have sympathy for them. And I think there's other ways to make things work without raising their property tax. That's my opinion.
All right. Anything else before we move on? Yes, Councilman Burns.
Kelly, can you save me a Google search afterwards? Banked capacity. So I understand the premise that we'd be voting to take that, and I'm not necessarily asking about the fiscal amount, but the ability. When they voted last year to turn it down, did they turn it down with leaving the ability for bank capacity? Or if we turned it down this year, is it just automatically available the next year to do that?
I don't know a lot of places that have, like, not taken the banked capacity, have taken the 1% but not taken the bank capacity. So that's a question I could ask the county assessor. Generally, organizations would bank, like if we banked last year and then if didn't make it this year, we would bank this year, and then the next year, if it was approved, yes, it would take the bank and the next 1%. Does that make sense? I haven't heard of very many organizations who have left the banked capacity and voted yes on the 1%. I assume that that is possible, that you could eventually, you could get that money back. But I don't know for certain. Is that making sense? Generally, people would bank capacity. Like if you banked capacity 3 years in a row, mm-hmm. and then that next year you would take all the banked capacity in. You wouldn't skip over a year, like bank capacity, take the 1%, and then bank capacity again.
So actually what I was just asking only had to do with the ability to use the banked capacity. Right. So when they voted last year to not increase the taxes by 1%, just in them saying no, it just automatically leaves the door open for us to do the bank capacity the next year. Is that the understanding?
I believe you have to the council approved it being banked. Okay. You have to approve it being banked to be able to use it.
Okay,
in the
so
next year.
Last year's council did leave the door open for this. This wasn't something that was automatic. They voted to allow the possibility for it to be banked this year.
I believe so. Does that sound correct to you?
It does.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right. So we're not necessarily going against what they had wished last year. Well, in a way, but they left the door open. They didn't just say no. We don't want any ability for it to be banked next year.
Correct. And just to build off that question, what I was trying to get at is, I don't know if you don't take it, mm-hmm. And you don't have anything, you don't bank anything this year because you took the 1%, how that works. Mm-hmm. That's not generally how things are done.
So if we lose it, you're saying that you don't know what, is there a possibility we might lose that or does it just roll over? Or?
If you take 2 years, if you bank capacity for 2 years in a row, like I know that that continues to bank. But I don't know if you skip a year, if you can go back.
It carries forward.
Yeah, how much it carries forward in those unique circumstances. But the county is very, I can see confusion on your face. We can clarify with the county to make sure a couple scenarios that are kind of on the table will all work.
Okay. All right. You basically clarified my question, I think, for finding out that the council did, in fact, approve it to be a possibility.
Yeah,
for banked.
I know we have confirmed with the county our recommendations are the correct numbers. We gave them our numbers, and they confirmed those are correct. Mm-hmm. And we'll run the scenario where we take the 1% but don't take the banked by the county as well, so we can present both scenarios to the council next time.
Okay. And Councilman Lavaca, I see you have a question.
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. So I had watched that one last year, and it seemed to me like they were not in favor of it at that time. I personally would be in favor of the 1%, but as Councilwoman Diamond pointed out, that the banked one, I wouldn't be so much because it seemed like they were really not adamant, but they just voted that to be. And it would seem like during a good year would be a great time to have that. During a tight year would be a difficult time, even though that's when it's needed. But during those good years, to be able to have that ability to see that growth and have that banked or put into an area that we're marketing the city to really build up more revenue in other areas, not just with property tax, but the overall 1%, in my opinion, is a relatively small amount for homeowners to all kind of pull their money together. And it does affect some homeowners in a negative way because they're very limited on what they have. But a majority of the homeowners would be pulling their money in for a positive thing. It's not very much at $40,000. And this time I think it was however much it is with the banked, but yeah, I don't know. Could you do numbers without the bank when you do those and with, like you're saying?
Yeah, I'll bring both examples next meeting.
Okay. So I see it's 7:30. We still have a couple other items that we want to get through. So, Kelly, is there anything else that you wanted to get across?
That's it. Thank you very much.
Really good discussion, great questions, and great presentation. Thank you, Kelly. All right, moving on now to the Community Development Grant Program. And Joe.
Well, I can't help but feel like I'm picking a bad day to do this. So the council had designated $500,000 for business development, and that was broken down to, I think it was $140,000 a year over 5 years, and we have not used anything this year. We had talked in the Business Development Committee meeting about a community development grant program. This was an idea that Charlie came up with that Glenn and myself both talked to him about quite extensively, and unfortunately Sarah wasn't able to make it, but we both seemed in favor of this idea. Essentially, I've noticed that a lot of people who help with donating their time in the city are getting up there in age, and there's less and less people who are doing it. And so I thought that if we pursued a program where we're encouraging people to help out in our society, to donate their time and their knowledge to help make something more beautiful or help make something more useful in our community, make things easier, then that could help bring us all together. That will help make people feel like they have a stake in our city, especially newcomers, especially people who maybe just haven't participated in the past. So my hope from the program is that we would do that as well as increase pride in our community. I'm pretty flexible on the ideas here. Charlie was nice enough to seek out what a couple other cities that have the same type of program have done. He sent that all to me, and I just kind of picked what I liked and left out what I didn't. And, you know, there was some, things that ruled out churches doing it. And I was concerned that maybe, you know, church groups might be able to do something that would be beneficial to the community and not necessarily religion-based. So I didn't want to just rule them out for something like that. Mm. I wanted them to have that opportunity as well. So I left that out of this. Things like new murals, cleanup costs. I was thinking about weeds in downtown alleys, things like that. If somebody wants to go spray weeds, we don't have time as a city or have it in the budget, but if they want to get the roundup and we pay them for it, then so be it. They donated their time. Exterior painting, landscaping, things to beautify the city. Some awning replacements and maintenance like that for the facades of buildings, especially downtown. I really like the idea of some historical markers. There's a lot of neat history in the city that we don't want to be forgotten, so we can help preserve that by coming up with ways to mark that, show it off to tourists as well. Advertising for the city. I actually thought of Councilmember Lavaca and some of the presentations you've given in the past, and I think that someone could do a lot of good with $5,000 to help promote our city and get people to stop here when they're blowing by to go to the North Cascades or someplace else upriver. Maybe they'll come here and spend a little money in our businesses and realize what a great place it is, come back next year. Let's see here. Street carnivals, live music, movies in the park, and other family-friendly events, something else that I wanted to include in there because I really wanted to encourage more community events, something that brings people together beyond just the projects. Not everybody has time to participate in one of these. So I thought that it would be a really great idea to do maybe live music downtown, having people be able to bring in a band or bring in a small street carnival, anything of that nature that's family-friendly. Those are the ideas that I had for it. We'll obviously have some strict criteria for people to get approved. We want to make sure that they give us a budget of everything that they expect to spend the money on. Photos for the area if it's something that they're planning on improving. Obviously, approval from a property owner if it's not on public property. Pretty detailed explanation of the project itself. And then we would make a setup for the city staff to approve it. Charlie, what committee had you suggested?
So my recommendation is that we look at the different categories of eligibility for this grant program, and then we funnel applications to particular areas. So one thing we're looking to relaunch is the Arts Commission, and they would be great at looking at any kind of like art installations or art-related projects or even music-related stuff. In a lot of communities, they do that kind of stuff. But for the other stuff, I can imagine if council members want to get involved, we could have a small group of council and staff potentially collaborating on these. I think it's really important that we don't over-bureaucratize it. That's not really a word, but I think you know what I mean. So we want to have it really quick and turn around quick. One thought here is the screening criteria, if they're tight and clear, it's going to allow us pretty quickly to determine whether or not it qualifies. And so if it doesn't qualify, I would just recommend it's out. But if it does qualify, it would come to a committee for just a quick review. Reality is the committee may just have feedback, but probably isn't going to deny it at that point because there'd be no basis to deny it. So you could almost, if you could tie it in, you could almost just have it be a check, you know, by staff. But I'd still recommend for those that are maybe not exactly within the lines that we look at having more of a committee approach. If nothing else, as I mentioned to Joe, to avoid groupthink, you kind of want to have 3 to 5 people. Just if you have to have a debate, you actually need enough people to have a debate. So for that reason alone, I'd recommend we create a small committee.
And I like the idea of a committee just for the fact that there's oversight for the money that we're spending. I'm not in any way suggesting that we spend the full $500,000 on this. I figured we have the $140,000 that was not spent this year. So put that into a fund for it, essentially. See where we end up with it in 6 months to a year. Revisit the project and see how things are going.
Great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions?
If I may, on that one, when I saw that, I was excited about that because it is something that I'm passionate about, as you guys know, marketing and creating something very fun for our residents and visitors when they come. So I kind of drove through all of our entrance points, like coming down Highway 20 on the going west, going east, going south on 9, north on 9, and seeing how we come into the city. I'm wondering if there's a way that we can propose like general ideas or areas that we would love to see focus on. And we could probably bring some of our community members and business leaders to the library for one day and just like an open forum just to like post some of these up there and say, what would you guys think about this? And would anybody want to take on this particular area? Because as we're coming through, there's really only that, the one sign with 8 listings and the small arrows that kind of direct, but you're doing about 45, 35 if you're, you know, and you just can't see them. And so it would really be cool to get their input, get buy-in, and then also have areas that we can look at, like roundabouts. I think Councilwoman Kesty brought up roundabouts at one time, pamphlets, marketing, parks, things like that would be really cool.
I actually really like the idea of giving people a list of ideas. That's a great way to kind of guide them in the expectations that we have for the program. Obviously, we want to make sure that they understand that, you know, think outside the box. We're good with that, but I think that's good to give them some options, maybe things that we'd love to see happen as well. Maybe we'll get lucky and somebody will pick it up.
I threw some pictures together on a thing. I'll email it over to your committee just so you can take a peek at that. And they're just the entrance points around, some roundabouts and showing like areas that really when you drive through, you just don't maybe see it. But I don't know. I catch it all the time. I'm like, I wonder why we don't.
Too fast.
No, I'm always looking around. I need to pay attention to the road.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. Thank you for bringing that forward. We look forward to hearing more on that. Last item tonight is revising the City Council Government's Handbook, Resolution 110922. This is the first read and information. Charlie?
Thank you, Mayor Johnson and Council. Both the City Attorney and I just took an initial pass at going through the Council Governance Manual, and I brought handouts tonight because it's a lot to look at. So I thought I would just quickly walk through some of the things that we're recommending. And you'll see the resolution is dated for the next meeting, next Wednesday. That's just being optimistic. I understand this may take a little while, depending on how much councilors want to get into it. But I'll just walk you through it as quick as I can. Some of this is just house cleaning updates. You have to update the date that it's actually going to be effective. That can obviously change, but it says November 9th. We update the council picture because that needed updating. And then it didn't show up in track changes quite the way I was hoping, but you're going to see a whole lot of edits around city supervisor changing to city administrator because the community made that change. I'm going to just jump to the bigger stuff that we're recommending. So study session format, made some clarifications there. There was some conversation amongst the council. Yes, sorry, I'm on page 9, which is actually crossed out. Not a big fan of track changes, so it's actually page 8, partway through down to page 9, where it says study session format, section B. Just making some clarifications here about what the intent is for action items coming or not coming to these. So I mentioned the first reading of agenda items, to be more specific, would be probably okay, but that's, again, for council's discretion. But kept the language about these being generally for emergency items or really time-sensitive items if there's going to be final action. So just trying to clarify that. You will see some areas that we just took out entirely. I believe it's on the next page, which is on 9 at this point. There is a area that's crossed out at the top of the page, and you'll see this again a little bit later, but there was a section here that was requiring the mayor and city administrator to pre-screen presentations that would be made to the council as a part of general council meetings. And I can tell you we don't do that. We don't have time to do that. And certainly if there's somebody who comes to us and makes a presentation that's inappropriate, the mayor's got control of the meeting, can deal with that, and they wouldn't be invited back. So I would recommend we handle it that way. So I'm going to go ahead and keep moving, going beyond the executive sections. Now I'm down on page 10, getting into page 11. And obviously, there'll be more time to look at this, but placing items on the agenda. We made some clarifications to that particular section. That's on 11. It's on the back side. And one of the clarifications was just requiring a motion. So you'll see any council member may request the addition of an item to future council agenda for initial consideration by making a motion. So then it would go on to that future agenda, and then a majority of council would need to determine if that was going to move forward. And it would need a second as well. But the idea there is just to make sure that a majority of the council is committed to allocating a bunch of staff time to work on particular policy items before we actually commit to that, just making sure that's really clear. I'm just going to keep moving. If anybody's got a question, just please holler, or we can come back to it. Page 12 on the backside, another clarification and kind of an update for COVID. Section 7 down there, C7, talking about council member meeting participation by telephone or video conference. The initial draft of this, by the way, was from 1994, so there's definitely some stuff that's it got migrated into the future, and there's some stuff that hung on from the past. And you'll see VHS tapes are mentioned in here, you know, VCR presentations and things like that. So we're taking all that stuff out. But in this particular section, this is talking about whether or not the council can meet by video conference. And Nikki helped us find the right reference in RCW to make sure that we're covered for that if we need to. So hope we don't need to do that too often. But we've certainly had experience in the last few years doing that. Going on to page 14 at this point. We deleted a bunch of things as well because continuing on in that section, there was a requirement for council members to get pre-approval by the council if they were going to be remote. And as we can see tonight, things come up. And unless the council wants to require that, I think that would be pretty challenging given how things often come up pretty quickly. And there's not enough lead time to really know if somebody's not going to be here and coming in virtually. So moving on down, page 14, page 15, not a lot of changes there. Page 16, another city administrator edit. Page 17, nothing really. Page 18, we got into making some edits to the three-touch principle, and we really left that in there, but we made some clarifications. Yep. Well, we left out the three-touch principle, at least at the top, but we tried to streamline a little bit and tried to clarify.
So part of 20 is still in there somewhere?
If you're down to 20, I wasn't quite there.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, you're right. Actually, I was looking.
So I'm looking at three touch at
20.
No
worries. I was up at 16, and there's still three touch in there. So we're going to want to make that change if we decide to take three touch out. So, yes, we did take three touch out as a hard requirement. But for ordinances, it's still required to be at least two touches. And we're just noticing the trend is towards, a good example is the interlocal agreement I brought at the last meeting, towards the council, leaving discretion to the council if you're comfortable taking action on an item, allowing you the ability to do that without necessarily having to go three touches on everything. Because I've noted that if we get to a third touch, there's either a reason for it and it needs to be reworked. Sometimes that happens. Or you're just looking at us like, please, don't bring this back.
I can tell you why the three touch was put in there, because we actually redid this like in 2016 or 17 or something like that. We did go over it. But the three touch was because there were a lot of things that were being brought before the council the night of, yeah, and wanting action on it that night. And so the council was demanding that there actually be at least one, if not two, opportunities to look at something. Yeah. That's why that was brought forward. So, yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, and this is all at the council's discretion. So these are just our recommendations to you at this point. You could certainly keep it in there. Motion for reconsideration. I'm still on 18 at the bottom. There was a clarification there. So such a motion must be reconsidered during the same council meeting was the thing that was there. And we added within the following two council meetings. What often happens with a motion for reconsideration is there's some kind of new information that comes to light, and it very rarely comes to light during that actual meeting. It's more likely to come to light after the meeting or a week later, where we learned something we didn't know, and council may want to make a motion to reconsider the vote. So that's why we expanded that time frame, or recommended expanding it. All right, now moving on to 19. Another administrator edit, the three-touch principle, as Councilmember Lavaca noted, we recommend taking that out. On 20, 21, into 20, the second page of 21, this is where we're recommending some significant changes with the council committees, and so I just wanted to highlight this for a minute. One thing we've been thinking a fair amount about is how to make the council committee meetings more predictable for the public, and also to make it easier with scheduling challenges and everything else for both the council and the staff. So what we did is went through an exercise, and this was the senior management team. And again, this is our recommendation. It's totally open to discussion and wherever the council wants to go. But we looked at the current council committees, and we thought about how busy is this committee versus that one. For example, public safety isn't terribly busy. I mean, we are keeping them still, recommending them still as a standalone committee. I believe it's planning. Hadn't met, according to John Coleman, in a long, long time because we also have a planning commission. And information technology was relatively new, but we thought maybe we could put them together with finance because you're often talking kind of internal administration type stuff. We recommended creating a strategic planning committee because the council used a lot of airtime on strategic planning this year, and perhaps if we had two or three council members who were more dedicated to that area, as we're going to have updates on our strategic plan and tracking it, that might be a more efficient way to work. Public Works, we consolidated some stuff into Public Works because we have the same staff essentially trying to staff multiple committees, and it's all within the Public Works umbrella. So putting it all in there with utilities and parks and streets and basically all things Public Works related. And then we put planning and business development together because I've found, and I know that the counselors who are on business development will definitely echo this, that oftentimes we'll invite John Coleman into our meetings anyway because the issues we're talking about with business development may not be super specific to business, but there are a bunch of planning issues that we also want to get into. So it would make sense to put them together. And then as a result of doing that, we were able to at least take out standalone parks and rec, business development, planning, utilities, and then, like I said, keep public safety. I did recommend adding emergency management to that realm as well, so we can have a little more focus on that. So this is our proposal for really interest is for the next year, for sure. And the mayor's got a little bit of a time crunch on this because of the need to appoint council committees. So we are hoping for some kind of action in the next meeting or two to give some guidance so that the mayor can figure out how to proceed in working with you all on getting these committee staff. But the idea here would be if we had five, we would have one challenge, three council members on four, and only two on the fifth. But there's the ability to rotate these meetings because of the number of council meetings we have per month. We have three. Cancel one, but it works out. We did the math where you could have a council committee meeting before each council meeting, whether it was a work session or a regular council meeting. We could publish the calendar at the beginning of the year, and it would be very transparent to everybody. That said, if you needed to have a special meeting of that committee, that's still a possibility. It would be on a different night in all likelihood, but it would make it easier, I think, for all of you in just coming a little bit early for the meetings that you're already planning to be at. And it would certainly be predictable for us and for everybody involved. So we could plan out a little bit more in detail, a little bit further, just how we're going to proceed through the year with each committee. So that's our pitch for council committees, and I just wanted to spend a little extra time on that. We spent some time on that. And moving on to page 22, you'll just see more conversation about the council committees, just clarification. About the council committees really being focused on policy items. That's the other piece we want to really kind of dial in with you. I think a good example is the grant program we just talked about that ultimately is council policy. But collaborating, working together on development of council policy, but ultimately in the long run, we think as the city grows, these council committees are going to be places where the council is probably going to want to send literal policy items. Where something may come up in council and it's like, we want to work on that. Okay, send that to business development and planning and go make that happen for us. And they'll work with staff and then come back with a recommendation to the full council for action. This also clarifies that the council committees do not take action on behalf of the council. It's simply a place, though, where things get vetted. And I can tell you in really high-functioning, strong mayor cities with council committees that are bigger, what ends up happening is the council, at least in, I can tell you in Issaquah from experience, the council committees there are pretty empowered. So a lot of times the action that happens at council committee, the rest of the council is quite trusting of what goes on at the council committee, and there's very little discussion and dialogue actually at the full council because there's a feeling that things were fully vetted and considered there. So as we grow and get busier, that's a kind of system we may gravitate into. So that's part of the thinking that we had in how we wrote this. And you'll see more city administrator edits. Page 23 is where I am now. Going on to 24. There was a whole process in here about temporarily, it's on 25 actually, temporarily filling a council member vacancy. And the more we thought about this, it is such a rare occurrence. And it, if you read through it, essentially what it would allow for is if there was a council member vacancy for a long period of time, long-ish period of time, whatever period the council determined they thought was too long, you could temporarily appoint a council member. And then that council member, there's a whole, it's the whole normal process for appointing a council member, which is relatively extensive for everybody. And then that person would only serve until the person who was out came back. And when the person who was out came back, let's say they didn't come back, then you have to go through a second process to actually fully fill that position. And that person who was in the temporary could apply for it. And when we looked at this, we just thought that is a lot of process. I don't know if this has ever been used before, but we would recommend just keeping it simple. So that's why we recommended taking that out.
Well, we've been through it three times, and we didn't do that at all.
So that's all of page 26 and down a little bit into getting close to 27 there. It just keeps going down to B1. And then, of course, leaving the filling the vacancy for mayor in there, that's critical if and when that ever happens, and it certainly has happened here, I know. Yep, and so just some minor edits to that. As I said, Nikki went through this with a fine-tooth comb, looked at the RCW references and everything else, and she'll be available as we get deeper into this conversation for dialogue on it. Now I'm into page 30, and there is some clarification that she provided there on citizen contact and interactions outside of a council meeting. I'm not going to cover it in great detail, but she's got RCW references. She's kind of modernizing this policy to make sure that it reflects the world we're in today. So take a look at that. There's some additional edits to, I knew it was going to happen to you eventually, it happened to me earlier, to social media as well. And so you'll see that in there, and that just reflects state law and Public Records Act stuff. Text messages are in there as well. Talks about how those are to be handled. And I'm going to keep on moving here. Page 32. Again, more city administrator edits. We did update one of the little things in here was, you know, we had 7 p.m. start dates for the council meetings, and it's actually 6 p.m. is what we do now. So little things like that that we changed to make them accurate. All right, moving on. Page 34, nothing. 35, nothing. 36, 37, nothing. I think there's only one thing at the back here. We've got an appendix of definitions, which is great. Anytime you're dealing with government, it's good to have that. But the one thing at the very back that I'm recommending we take out is this index. Because this is such an old document, nothing is actually linked in it. So this index has to be manually updated. So we'd actually have to word search this document, and I just am begging you to not make us do that. The other thing is the table of contents is going to be off after we do this. So we're going to have to go in back and manually do that. And at some point, we'll link that up and get that all organized as well. But that is what we're looking at. So my intention would be to bring this back for you for further conversation and wherever you want to go with it on the 9th, if you're so inclined.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
I think you guys did a great job.
Thank you.
It looks really good.
Thank you guys for all your hard work. Tonight really shined a lot of what you guys do in the vaccine. I hope everybody appreciates it. I know I do.
Okay, if that is it, next meeting is going to be November 9th, next Wednesday at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers.
And Madam Mayor, I'm sorry, I will not be here physically.
Okay, and we will excuse you at the next roll call.
Emotionally. Yeah.
All right, we are adjourned. Yeah, it's drafty.